This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Austin Martin is an academic, author, and community leader who has participated in a community-based volunteerism and advocacy for the disabled. He has also struggled with schizophrenia for much of his adult life. In 2006, Austin became the first Canadian with schizophrenia to be awarded with the Order of Canada. In a commentary published on June 14, 2014 in the Edmonton Journal, Austin Martin argues that mental illness should be treated as aggressively as cancer. In our inactivity as a society until something horrible happens, he writes, in effect criminalizes mental illness, which is first and foremost an illness and a medical issue. Austin believes that the tragedies such as the murders of the three Moncton, New Brunswick RCMP officers on June 4, 2014 will continue to happen until we learn to diagnose and treat mental illness quickly and aggressively.
Austin Martin begins his article by reviewing a series of front page tragedies, from a mass shooting to a mass stabbing to the murder of three Mounties in New Brunswick. I spoke with Austin earlier this week and began by asking him to comment on how these tragedies appear to be linked to mental illness.
One can only assume that the reports that have come out in the media are correct, and what we hear that in most cases, people, those incidents, the family or people around had tried to get the people mental health aid beforehand, before the tragedies happened. And for whatever reason, either the police didn't respond, or they didn't respond appropriately, or they weren't, there was no intervention beforehand to prevent the tragedies, if the tragedies could have been even prevented. But it broke down. It seemed to be a systemic series of similar systemic breakdowns in terms of when somebody becomes first ill, that they weren't appropriately contacted.
And you also go on in your article to talk about the young man in California then being portrayed as a woman hater, the young man who killed the Mounties in Moncton as being an anti-government kind of gun nut. What role does the media play in all of this?
I think that in basically what I'm trying to say is the cause is not those kind of pronouncements. The cause seems to be these people's existing or appearing mental illness. And just like with Kaczynski, the Unabomber, as I say in the article, is the anti-technology rants are similar to these two other rants and is a product of their mental illness. Rather than the actual rants being the cause, those are a symptom of the underlying mental illness.
You bring personal experiences to your advocacy and education work. Tell us just briefly about your first psychotic break as a young adult and what lessons you drew from that.
Well, I was first diagnosed in 92. And what happened was my mother had schizophrenia when I was five. And so my father was well acquainted with schizophrenia because it was all during my childhood because of my mother. I wasn't ill back then. And then at the age of 30, I started to act very strangely and hear voices and talk to myself and do many of the things that a person starting to exhibit schizophrenia starts to do. And so my father knew exactly what was wrong with me because of the genetic loading in my family, that it was probably the schizophrenia, as was later confirmed. And so he took me to emergency in Edmonton, the University of Alberta Hospital, and tried to get me help and sat with me for 7 hours in the emergency. And the doctors refused to treat me, refused to admit me, even though I was severely psychotic. I was extremely sick and out of it, and said that my father had to actually take care of me. And my father has a PhD, but it's in medieval English. So he's obviously not qualified to take care of somebody that's has schizophrenia, although he knew that I was sick with this because of my mother, and he knew it was genetic. And so then he walked out of the emergency ward because there was nothing we could do, and I went with him. I was just following him like a puppy, and went to St. Joe's College, and he walked into the chaplain, I forget his name's office, and the chaplain said, just leave. You can't stay here. You have a job. You have your wife to take care of your other children, and leave, and hopefully Austin will be taken care of. If he's picked up, then they can't try to fob him off on you again. So that's what he did. He just walked out of the door and left me, and I wandered around the city for close to 20 hours talking to myself, hearing voices, the whole spectrum of symptoms related to schizophrenia, until I was picked up during a service, end of a mass, so that I walked into talking to myself, taken to emergency. And that's when I was admitted to the hospital because they had nobody to fob me off on. And that's when I started receiving treatment and have never missed a medication since. But it could have been a tragedy in my case. I might have, I don't think dangerous to anybody else, but I might have done something to myself. I might have been run over because I was talking to myself, looking up at the sky, and it was quite bad. But I think that happens a lot, and a lot more than we realize, that people that first exhibit are not taken seriously.
You pose the question, why is it a civil liberty issue that people who are too sick to know they're sick are allowed to wander around in a daze, unable to protect themselves? Tell us more about the civil liberties in this context.
What I say in the article is that people with Alzheimer's that are 80 versus people with a similar illness, schizophrenia or bipolar, in their 20s or teens or 30s, in the case of 80-year-olds that have Alzheimer's that wander away from a nursing home with similar symptoms to young people in acute psychosis, they have amber alerts and they all of a sudden call out the Mounties and call out the Army to rescue this senior citizen, and yet you can't even file a report if the person's 19 or 20 with schizophrenia because they say, oh, the person's responsible for themselves. But isn't the person at 80 responsible for themselves in the same capacity when you have diminished mental capacity?
You use the word criminalization and suggesting that society's inactivity or inability to take care of these issues early amounts to the criminalization of mental illness. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, I think that various things in our society have, you know, because we don't treat mental illness early enough, then disasters and extreme tragedies occur because we don't treat people and the police aren't necessarily trained enough in terms of dealing with mental health issues, and our mental health system needs to be improved all over the country, and these in turn mean that nuisance crimes in terms of non-violent crimes, people get labeled as criminals. If they are wandering psychotic down the street, the police will pick them up and arrest them for a vagrancy or nuisance crime, and they therefore become criminals. And in the case of these violent crimes, that were, it seems, completely preventable, that people could have been an intervention that could have occurred beforehand. And hopefully, through increased police training and an improved mental health system and maybe long-term CTOs, that these kind of things could be set in place so that people might receive treatment. Basically, before the event occurred, the families knew these people were very sick. They mostly thought they were going to be a self-destructive kind of thing rather than lashing out at others. And the police and society as a larger whole did nothing to intervene or the interventions were inappropriate.
What's a long-term CTO?
Well, I've talked with John Gray about this and presented a paper. Community treatment orders are where people are forced treatment in the community rather than what is the usual case where it's usually forced treatment in an institution. And I think in the case of Vincent Lee and others that have committed a really horrific act, that they should be put under a equivalent of a parole or permanent CTO because of the dangerousness of what they had, rather than until they get better and then they can, of course, get sick again, because the condition of them being better is that they keep taking the meds. So we have to make sure that the serum level in their blood is at a constant level, and that can only be ensured with a permanent CTO for somebody like Vincent Lee or these other people that have acted out extremely violently.
Austin, is there anything else you'd like to add to this conversation?
Yeah, it's also very disappointing that one of the results of these kind of incidents, and an inadvertent result that affects society in a broader thing, is people generally don't seek medical treatment generally after these kind of events because they don't want to be labeled with these kind of criminal, extremely violent mental health episodes. And the irony is that for most, the vast majority of people with mental illnesses, they are not violent, and the vast majority are actually usually victims of crime rather than perpetrators of major crimes. Because of the inactivity, people stay sick, whereas they might receive treatment at least to manage or at least control the worst part of their mental illnesses. And so hopefully people that are listening will say, well, maybe I should try to cooperate with the doctors and try to cooperate with my treatment teams, or seek out treatment if you think that you have a mental illness. Get treatment and stay well. I mean, like for me, myself, my job I see in society is to stay well and to stay healthy. And if that means taking the medication, then so be it. And I think that we have to say that, I mean, in the past, when my great-grandmother got schizophrenia in the 1890s, she was just institutionalized for 20 years and died in an asylum in the south of England, whereas at least I've had a life outside of what would probably have been a life in an asylum 50 years ago, whereas now I can live in the community, make a contribution, write somewhat controversial articles, and give radio interviews. And maybe it's not the life I expected, the life, you know, I expected as a professor when I was doing my PhD, but it is a life, and it's a worthwhile life, as many of the listeners with mental illnesses lives can be. Just maybe not the same as before. So I just want to leave it with hope, that I believe that there's hope for many people with mental illness as long as they try to stay healthy and balanced and reduce the stress and eat healthy and not use street drugs and try to take their medications properly. If I could get the Order of Canada, as I did in 2007, and my second recent honorary doctorate on May 29th from the University of Lethbridge, that if I can do that under the what is a pretty big burden of schizophrenia, then a lot of people can maybe succeed in their own venues and their own lives and reach that brass ring that they want to achieve in their own lives.
Austin, Martin, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Austin Martin is an academic, a writer, and an advocate working on behalf of people with disabilities. You can find him online at austinmartin.org.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.